It's good to be here today, isn't it? I had to think, you know, understanding each other is important, isn't it? When Jesus stood before Pilate, who was the civil authority of his day, he said, "Are you a king?" He said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my followers fight?" And Pilate got it. Pilate understood. You know what? This man is not a rival to our kingdom. And he would have left him go. But he was pressured. He was pressured into making a decision to have him crucified instead. Understanding, is it important? I think it is. And so it's good for us to be able to interact. And we are glad, we are blessed today to have some folks here, some from Erie, Pennsylvania, some from Washington, who have made the trip here in order to understand and to make us understand. And so we're going to start by introducing John Williams, who's come to us. He's our State Director of the Selective Services. He's come here and he's going to share and introduce the rest of the Selective Service folks. And then after that, we'll work on having kind of an enactment of a draft board so you can get a feel for what that might be like. John?
Well, to start with, I want to thank Rick Hess for inviting me to this. This is, to me, is very, very important because it connects us. It gives us a face-to-face kind of encounter, and I think that's the best way to find out about people, is to talk with each other and enjoy and appreciate where we're all coming from. Selective Service has gone through some different changes. There's all kinds of different technology that's been coming forward, and for this 78-year-old, it's kind of interesting to get into some of this stuff, and I can't say I'm all together tight with it. But you've heard too of the possibility of registering young ladies, and I can tell you right now that's been put on the back burner, and that may not be addressed for quite a while. So, and let's we'll put that one aside for what's going on. Now, the other thing, my background. 4 years Marine Corps, 20 years professional firefighter, as a director of Veterans Affairs in my county. But I've worked in Selective Service since Governor Tom Ridge. So that's like 27 years. And it's given me a different perspective on all of this, in particularly with the Anabaptist side of this. It's just, it's so amazing to me. And the mere fact that our country allows everyone to have freedom. And that is reflected in Selective Service. It's very, very important to us that you are respected and allowed to be who you want to be. And that is your personal objective in life is to lead a good life. So I'm just amazed at how this all goes and what you've done. And the other thing, let's reduce this down to the community level, like I was talking about face-to-face stuff and that sort of thing. And the way the Selective Service is structured is your peer group are the ones that are going to listen to you when you petition to become conscientious objectors. So in other words, you're not going to have to go to Philadelphia and have somebody hear your explanation of your beliefs, nor are people from Philly going to have to come down here. So that's the important thing, the fact that the community is aware of who you're living with. And it's just that's big. That's absolutely big. And today we're going to, I'm sure Rick will introduce Ken Montgomery, but I want to acknowledge him too. He is the main guy in Washington, D.C. for alternative service, and has an awful lot of good things to say. So, you know, pay attention, you know, and you'll appreciate where he's coming from. Now, the other thing too, we're going to have a Mockberg Award here. We have two gentlemen. We have Greg Sod, and we have Steve Denninger. Am I right in the last name? Dellinger. Ah, I knew I'd screw it up. Well, anyway, but we have two board members from your community. And then we're also going to have James. There he is. Yep. So it's going to be an interesting board. Now, you got to remember that they haven't ever done this before in this sort of event. So forgive them if you see a little interruption here and there and they're questioning and all that. And I think we have four young men, Rick. So that's going to be pretty interesting. The only thing I might do is I might move this table back a little bit so we can have the young gentleman here. And it would be great if you could see the expressions on everybody's face, because I think that's, you know, part of it all. But however, we will make it. We'll make this work. So again, thank you, Rick, for inviting me. I think this is just so important. You know, we don't know the times we live in and all that. But let's make peace with each other, so to speak, and stay that way. And work through this, work through it together. That's the important thing. So without Rick, if you don't mind, can we have Ken come up then? Okay. Oh, Navy personnel here. He was a corpsman. And so for Marines, Navy corpsmen are like gods. They're the ones that keep us well and if we're you need healing, so.
Thank you, Rick Hess, congregation leaders, members of CASP and CAM. First of all, this is an honor and a pleasure to address you. As John has so eloquently stated, I'm the Alternative Service Program Manager for Selective Service System. It is my job to ensure that we have employment opportunities for conscientious objectors nationwide. Now, I've been to a few events. I've visited Berlin, Ohio, wonderful time. And I learned a lot, and when I left there, and even though I haven't been there in a while, I took back some things that the brothers relate to me. One, earlier the gentleman spoke about temptation. The interaction between non-believers and believers. So I'm not going to have a sermon, but I'm going to, the reason I bring this out is because as I run the program, I think about these things, about, okay, we have an alternative service program, but not everyone, there's many different conscientious objectors, but not everyone have, I would call, solid beliefs in just serving God and doing certain things. And there's conscious objectors who don't believe in war, who are, for whatever reason, have a different thought process. One of the things that our mission, or what I've championed since I've been a part of Selective Service, is to ensure that I look at every aspect of the program where, one, I do not have to, or will we be obligated to move individuals, young men, from the area, from where they live. It is our goal to, one, recognize and support CAM and the wonderful work that CAS has done. As I explained to many of my colleagues and state and federal officials, I said, I have had the opportunity to visit some of your sites, agriculture, industries, and things of that nature. And as we all know, back in Vietnam, the government did not do a good job supporting conscientious objectors and finding qualified work. You all have done a great job with the community public service, agriculture, forestry, and working in hospitals. As John alluded, I'm a retired senior chief hospital corpsman. I served many years with my brothers, the Marine Corps. And I went into that job based on the Geneva Convention to save lives. But at the same time, to save lives, I was also prepared to give my life for my fellow Marines, if need be. But my faith in God is very strong. I took care of the Marine Corps, and the Marine Corps took care of me. But with all that being said, I just want to give a quick, brief overview about our program, your program. Alternative service, yes, the main goal, and the nexus to, as we're going to witness here soon, to be a part of to be evaluated or to be reclassified from a registrant or an inductee to a conscious objector starts with registration. It starts with registration. If your young men are not registered at the time when there's a draft, for whatever reason, the opportunity to go before a board has been voided. So it's very important. Registering doesn't mean that you're going to war. Registration is the law. And I've listened, and you all are very God-fearing, first, law-abiding citizens. And you support this country, and you have been supporting this country for hundreds of years. But Selective Service is not the vehicle to say, or myself to say, I've been to Berlin, Ohio, I've been here, and I know that this individual is a conscious objector, but I'm going to approve. Selective Service has no authority to change the classification of a registrant or inductee to conscious objector. That solely lies with the board, the local boards. So, one of the things, since I served in the military for 28 years and I learned some things, I said, all right, let me put myself in your shoes. Can I do that for a moment? So, I've been raised to be a God-fearing, worshiping individual, which I do. I'm a husband, I'm a father of two wonderful daughters, also a grandfather. So I'm very blessed in that sense. But my foundation is with God. So, coming from the Navy, Marine Corps, for 28 years, one would think that I'm just pro-military. No. God gave me an individual brain to think, and he also provided me an opportunity to come to Selective Service because he felt I had the right mindset to listen, to appreciate, and respect all people. So this is what I've explained and told many church leaders, peace church leaders. If it was I, and I'm not advocating, I'm not here to say I advocate one way or the other, but this is a common sense approach. If I'm 13 years of age, and I'm already being raised in the faith to honor God, to be a peace-living person, and my sole religious belief is being a conscious objector, I ask you to do one thing, young men. If you're 18 years, between 18 and 25, please raise your hand. I got a message for you. It's a simple one. You're going to love this one. I would like for you to start a diary of what you've done in your life, what your life is about. And I believe my religious leaders, church leaders, CAPS leaders, CAM, will agree with me. If you have a storybook of how you've lived your life and how you've dedicated your life to God, yes, you have to present yourself in front of a local board. The local board will hear you when you speak to them. They'll have a chance to look at your body language, facial expressions, and to be honest with you, as John alluded, you're going to be evaluated from people of your community. But you know what is more, just as important as you presenting yourself, is to present a storybook, documentation of how you've lived your life. And the reason I say this is that I'm not saying local boards are not going to hear you or respect you or even agree with you. But for that 1% or less than 1% chance that a local board doesn't feel you are a conscious objector, there's an appeal process. And one of the things that will support you in not only in a local board setting, but in an appeals process is that they have to read about your life. That's indisputable. That is indisputable. Because for one to take the time to document how they've lived their lives loving God, supporting their Christian community and their organization, those are very factual, chronological things that a local board or no one else can dispute ever. So, the process. So let me tell you about how I manage the alternative service program. One, it is not my goal to take young men and move them 50 miles to work for the federal government. Because not only are we very happy to have CAM, the CAS program, but since I've been with the agency, I am working with state governors, the federal government, to have an additional robust alternative service program where I can keep young men in your community with your community. This is one of the things that the religious leaders told me, the CAM leaders told me a couple of years ago. Now, sometimes when you speak to people in the government, they shake hands and they walk away and you wonder, did they listen? I heard you. Not only did I hear you, I respect you. And there's a great opportunity for me, based on what we're doing at Selective Service, is to have conscious objectives staying with their communities, working for the state government, working for the federal government, and things of a like, where individuals do not have to be cross-pollinated into different cultures. One of the things I read about, because obviously during Vietnam I was probably, well, the tail end of Vietnam I was 4, giving my age. I was born in 64. But being in the military, I read about Vietnam. I had uncles who served in Vietnam. I'm not going to stay here up and say if it was a just war or not just war, but can we say there was lessons learned for everyone about from Vietnam? But what I did learn by in the position that I hold now as the alternative service program manager is that we did a poor job of respecting conscious objectors and providing qualified, eligible work, and more importantly, working opportunities where people can stay in their communities and not pull people, your young men, out, send them someplace else, and they come back to you totally different. Let me say that again. We took your young men a long time ago. They served in a conscious and an alternative service program capacity. But when they came back, did they come back the same or did they come back different? So I'm asking a question. If you think they came back a little different, raise your hand. Is that a concern? Yes. So I say that to let you know I hear you. I hear you. I respect you. And that's not going to be the case under my watch. We have created a process where a conscious objector from your community will stay with your community. A conscious objector who is not part of your community, I have another alternative work for them to do within the state or within the federal government. We do not have to move, bus, or transport individuals back and forth to accomplish the agreements for alternative service for a 1W. So with that, are there any questions for me? Did you like what you heard? All right, amen. So, and I came here with that simple message. It's a very simple message. We're here to support you 100%. But I have an ask, though, because I don't know everything. And because I'm humble and I don't know everything, I need your help. This question is to CASP, the CAM, and the CASP leaders. I've read some things about some of the programs and the projects that you have, but I need that information as I'm creating my policies to support 100% of what you're doing. I do not, nor will I, create a policy without your input. John has my information. Rick, I believe, has my information. If you all can work with John and Rick, I need information about all of your alternative service programs, or better known as your conscientious Anabaptist service program. I need that information. I need to know where these projects are located, not only in the state of Pennsylvania, but nationwide. Reason I'm asking for this is as I start doing a map of where your young men need to stay at, I have to justify it. I will not make a decision blindly without conferring with you. So that's my only ask. I need your help to make this program a program that it benefits all, but primarily where we do not disrupt your lifestyle, your religious beliefs, and your family beliefs. With that, I thank you so much.
Let's move this. Let's move this. To be completely specific, if we did have a board meeting, but the important thing that we want here is the questioning, the sincerity of the person, and that's what you're looking for as a board member. So bear with us if there's some glitches, but that's the essence of what we're doing here. Gentlemen, you may find some very interesting folks coming up here. So.
Mr. Glick.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you today?
I'm doing well. A little nervous.
Good. Well, we're a little nervous up here, too, so we're all nervous. We're all nervous together. So
okay,
relax.
Sounds good.
I'm just going to ask you a few questions at some point, but before that, I wanted to read this to you as opening remarks. Can everybody hear me? I could hear the feedback, yes. Opening remarks is what I'm going to read to Mr. Glick and for you all to hear it as well. This is an informal hearing. Photographic sound equipment, verbatim transcripts are prohibited. However, you as a registrant may take notes during the hearing. You may have up to three witnesses to buttress or support your view, and you may not, however, be represented by a lawyer, but you may have an advisor. The advisor may have discussions with you, but may not take an active part in the hearing or interfere with the proceeding nor act as a witness. You may have an interpreter if necessary. You may present evidence not contained in the file. Presumably before you step back here for the audience and for your information, presumably we would already have had a file on you. You may not present any evidence, additional evidence, that's not contained in the file, is what that means. And any false statements are subject to imprisonment of up to 5 years or a fine of up to $250,000 or both. With that, is there anything you want to say at this point before we ask you some questions here?
No, go ahead.
Okay. How long have you held your conscientious objector, or CO, we'll refer to it hereafter, beliefs?
It's been for 3 years.
Do you want to ask?
How did you come to develop a conscience against objecting to participation in military service?
So, first of all, I was born and raised in a Christian home. Secondly, so let me back up there. First of all, I've been brought up with this. But as a young man, at 16 years of age, just before I turned 17, I dedicated my life to Christ. And it was then that I realized I personally can't fight because Christ has taught me to love my enemies and not to kill.
So your reason would be that because Christ loves you and Christ asks you to love others.
Yeah, and that's yeah. Correct.
Okay. Are there any wars or any types of wars that you would consider fighting in? Any type of military service that you would consider to be an option?
For me personally, no.
Would you consider serving in as part of a military unit in a non-combative function?
Okay. So my answer to that is, if I'm conscientiously objected to fighting in the war, I'm also conscientiously objected to identifying with the U.S. Army in any way. So no, non-combatant service would not be an option.
This hardly needs asking, but I will ask as a formality here. How do you feel about killing?
Killing a person, period?
Killing. Killing generally. A living being.
You're saying other humans, not animals.
Yeah.
Okay. For me, no. I would sooner give my life than to kill somebody else.
Okay. Are you a hunter?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll just leave that there. You may ask.
What evidences, you've made your claim, but what evidences would you be able to offer us in support of your claim? I'm not doubting your claim,
mm-hmm.
but what evidences could you offer as far as lifestyle that you believe what you believe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess you would have to ask my neighbors and my coworkers what they think. I've tried to live the teachings of Jesus and to turn the other cheek. You could ask my siblings how I do at home with retaliation. You could ask them. Are you asking for me to give evidence?
Yes, you're the one that's on being asked.
Okay.
I mean, I appreciate your humility mm-hmm. in referring to others, and I believe that's very appropriate. Mm-hmm. But if you'd be able to present to us, maybe an example of where
yeah.
you were able to apply the love of Jesus mm-hmm. to others, that would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if I have a good example of this, but a few years ago, and back to the question, am I a hunter? I was hunting on someone else's land. They had given me permission to hunt there. He had told me not to walk through this certain field. But to get to my one tree stand in the dark, I did. And when he found out, he wasn't happy. So, this seems to go against me. But when I realized what I had done, I went back to that man and I apologized. I told him I'm sorry. And, he wasn't happy with me. I don't hunt there anymore. We dropped that. We're still neighbors. We're still great friends. But that's one example of, instead of getting angry with him for his complete unreasonable command not to walk through a poor alfalfa field, I just went back and made things right and tried to live peaceably with him.
Thank you. That was good.
Just for the benefit of the audience, since this is a mock procedure, there would be documentation filed by the registrant, he would have the opportunity to have three witnesses to, you know, speak in support of his claim of being a conscientious objector. So we're sort of missing that piece of it. So
have you found yourself in a position whereby you protested something with a group of folks outside a establishment?
Mm-hmm.
You have?
No.
Okay.
No, I was just saying I understand what you're
okay.
saying.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I never have.
Okay. Do you envision yourself being in a non-combatant role in support, as a support person or part of a support organization?
No, honestly, I never thought about that, but no, I don't envision myself to ever be at that place.
So would you explain to me why you want to be a conscientious objector?
Mm-hmm. Well, as a follower of Jesus Christ, he gave his life for me. And now I am his servant, his kingdom. I am in his kingdom. The reason I want to be a conscientious objector is because I want to follow his laws, obey his teachings. And his teachings are, since he says, since my kingdom is not of this world, then my servants won't fight.
What's your view of a conscientious objector? What do you think that is?
So my view of what a conscientious objector means is a person who's willing, first of all, not to kill, a person who's willing to sacrifice his ideas, his agendas for another person, for the betterment of somebody else. And a person who is more interested in another person's good than my own.
I have no further questions.
I don't either.
We will deliberate and then give you an answer before you leave here this evening or today. We won't hold you till this evening. We will deliberate, let you know our decision. Thank you. Unless you have anything further to add, you're excused.
Yep. Thank you for being willing to come out here today. Appreciate that.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Malangowski?
Malangowski, yeah.
Thank you for being here. Do you have anything to add to what you would have, if there were a real proceeding, you had already submitted for the board to review? Do you have anything to add to that?
No.
That's a tough question.
Sure.
What in your experiences have led you to believe that you can best assist as a conscientious objector?
So I started out my life actually in a family that would have come from a patriotic background. Both my grandfathers would have been, well, my one grandfather served in the military in Vietnam, and my other grandfather was a Coast Guard. So definitely very patriotic. While I was still fairly young, then our family came in contact with what people call the more radical teachings of Jesus, which would be things like non-resistance and it would be one of those. And since then, by reading the Bible myself, I've come to the point of believing this. So one thing in the Bible would be, in Matthew 5, Jesus would say, "You have heard that has been said, you shall love your enemy, love your friends and hate your enemies," basically. But he says that, "I say unto you, love your enemies, bless those that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for those which despitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be the children of your Father which is in heaven, because God sends the sun and rain on the evil and the good people."
You indicated that you, at an early age, what age are you talking about?
Eight, or right around eight, yeah. So I did have some understandings. It was not mature understanding of everything, for sure.
When would you have thought that it would have become a mature understanding of your objection to participating in military service?
Right. So it's not a question that has been directly faced to me that I have to decide this for real. I probably would have formed it over my formative years, more gradually, but I am at a place of believing it myself. So I probably would have understood it a lot better when I was 14 or 16 in that area.
What would be the source of your belief? I mean, you've alluded to the fact of being a follower of Jesus, but most of us have been influenced by outside influences throughout our lives. There's been significant people, there's been books, there's been experiences. So what experience would you point as a formulative experience toward developing your objection?
That's a good question. Let's see. Well, one thing that is significant, I watched a debate on the just war theory to understand it a little better. That would have been definitely an influence in my life. I have read books, some things like David Brousseau's book, The Kingdom That Turned the World Upside Down. Probably read about it in there. I can't think of any really significant things that would.
It's probably more of a gradual process. Are there any types of wars that you would consider participating in?
Not any physical wars. Paul does say in I'm not sure where, but we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, against the rulers of dark, spiritual battles. But that is, not, I don't think, what you're talking about.
As far as physical wars.
Do you hunt? I figure I have to ask everybody, sure. Since I asked the first gentleman here, Mr. Clay. You do?
I do.
Okay. What would be your view of a conscientious objector?
Sure.
I mean, how do you view yourself?
Right.
You're requesting CO status.
That's right.
I mean, what's your vision of that, of that status?
The way I see it for myself would be someone who is in their conscience, which is opposed to warfare and taking other people's lives. Some people would be conscientiously, for myself, it's because of my religious beliefs. For others, there are probably some people who it's more of an ethical thing. For me, it is my religious beliefs.
Yeah. How does this belief that it's wrong to participate in war impact your daily life?
Well, just as if I would be called to go to war, I say that Jesus' teachings are going to affect my life then. They should definitely be affecting my life now. So it affects my relationships with people, and I strive to do it in a Christ-like manner, which I have not yet totally attained that. But I do strive for that. To be at peace with my neighbors, we do. One example would be we have a very obstinate neighbor that is the kind of man that would be easy to get on the bad side of him. And we have been there already through circumstances that weren't necessarily our fault. But to learn to agree with your adversary quickly while you're still with him, and to live your whole life that way is the goal.
Do you go to church services every Sunday without fail?
I do, except there would be occasions if I'm really sick. But okay, that, sure. That is very rare.
Okay.
I would hate to miss it.
Okay, so you practice your faith is what I'm getting. Okay.
And I try to have my faith as part of my everyday life, not just Sunday. I won't be the same person all week.
That's good to know. Thank you. Any further? Thank you. You're excused. You will hear from us before we leave this evening.
Okay. Thank you.
Stephen Lapp, you're called before the draft board.
Hi.
Hello.
I didn't catch your name. Mr.
Stephen Lapp.
Lapp. Mr. Lapp. Thank you. What do you view, what's your vision of a conscientious objector? I mean, why do you want to be a conscientious objector?
Sure. So a conscientious objector is someone who objects going to war. So basically, I am a conscientious objector because Jesus called us as, I'm a follower of Jesus, and Jesus said to love your enemies, to bless them which curse you, and to good to them which despitefully use you. So being a conscientious objector is loving those that oppose us, loving those that are totally against us. And that's why we, when people misuse us, we don't take people to court, because we love people.
So what's your view of being a conscientious objector? I mean, what do you think you would be serving doing as a conscientious objector? So you're applying to be a CEO.
Sure.
Why? I mean, what's your vision of that?
In other words, what am I planning on being, doing when I'm a conscientious objector?
To assist the effort. Instead of going to battle, to war, and killing people, how would you assist in that effort as a CEO, a conscientious objector?
So I would do it in a way that I would do something that helps other people. And that's part of being a Christian, part of helping other people. So it could be helping someone who lost their homes, helping someone in the hospital, hurting people, dying people. Basically, wherever there's hurting, being the hands and feet of Jesus and helping the hurting.
Okay. Good answer. Excuse me. Do you hunt?
I do not.
Okay.
I used to, but I currently don't.
Okay.
How long have you held such beliefs about being a conscientious objector?
So, since I was 14.
And what was the significance of that date?
Sure. So, actually, March 26th, so it would be 5 years on 26th of March, I became a Christian. Before that, I was raised in a Christian home, so I had the teachings of not going to war. I read books. From the time I was very young, I loved reading books. But I was in no case non-resistant. If my siblings aggravated me, I would lose a temper. And I was very angry. And you won't want to be beside Stephen when he's angry, because things fly. You could ask my siblings this. Things flew. I was extremely angry. But after I became a Christian, God did work on my anger. And now you ask my siblings, and they could tell you that I don't get angry anymore. And so it's the power of Jesus that can help us overcome anger, help us. And now I don't have fight in me. If something bad happens, I don't want to fight. Before I was a Christian, war was my... I actually love war. I, my flight time, I enjoyed playing war. That was just fascinating to me.
James?
You've answered your questions there very well. But are there, if you say the fight's all out of you, I mean, are there any wars that you would fight?
Yeah, spiritual war. I would love to fight the enemy, the powers behind the war, the reason why people fight and go to war, the reason why Putin is wanting to fight against Ukraine. So yes, I would love to go to war, but not kill people.
Could you see yourself serving as a conscientious objector, a la Johnny Miller, working in the hospital?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I have no further questions. Gentlemen? Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Biden.
You're welcome.
Andreas Stump, you're called before the draft board.
Hey.
Howdy.
All right, how you doing?
Doing well.
Good afternoon. Mr. Stump?
Yes.
Thank you for being here today. We are probably just as nervous as you are, so just relax. We're on the same boat as you are, in the same boat as you are. So tell me a little about yourself, and particularly your background with respect to your nonviolent conscientious objector request. What would support that conscientious objector request?
Yeah, so I would consider myself to be in a good standing member at my church. So, you know, our church has had a long standing of non-resistance, so I support my church, and I figured that since they believe in non-resistance, I should just, you know, keep going with that. Figured that'd be a good idea. Yeah, my dad's a pastor. I appreciate him as a fella, and figured he has some good ideas on non-resistance, being a CO, so I just kind of agreed with that.
Do you see yourself as a pastor someday, maybe? No one's holding you to that commitment right now.
Yeah, probably not.
Okay. All right. Probably see all the work he does, and that's probably difficult to get your mind wrapped around. Do you go to church regularly or every Sunday, unless you can't?
Yeah, I try to when it's convenient.
Okay. You hunt?
No, I don't really enjoy that.
Okay. Gentlemen?
So was there any point in the past where you specifically came to the realization that you wanted to be, would be a conscientious objector, or is it just a process of family and church?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, you know, growing up, I was just like thinking that, you know, you have to sacrifice a lot to go to war. It's kind of inconvenient. It kind of mess up your family and job, and wouldn't want to disrupt that.
James,
you made reference of, you know, believing what your church believes, but is this really in your heart? Is this in your conscience? I mean, the conscience is sort of our inner being of who we are. I mean, are there situations, you know, if somebody would really push you hard, would you tend to retaliate?
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm part of a peace church. I'm part of a peaceful revolution. So yeah, I mean, it's somewhat, you know, I stand behind my church, and I wouldn't want to disrespect them.
Could you see yourself serving as a conscientious objector like Johnny Miller's story, which was so compelling?
Yeah, I think that'd be a cool thing to do.
Okay. Anything?
Yeah.
No further questions. Thank you so much, Mr. Stump.
Mm-hmm. We'll take a 5-minute break here while we discuss these among ourselves. So we probably should turn this off. Well, thank you. In my closing remarks, before I reveal the decisions, unanimous, I should say, of the board here, I want to thank you and all, and I want to thank the young men who came forward to participate in this exercise. I want to thank Joseph Glick, Daniel Malangowski, Stephen Lapp, and Andreas Stump. So you guys did a great job, and really appreciate your service, really, in this process. The decision will be made, as I say, it was unanimous, and we'll share that with you in just a minute. The decision was based on the oral testimony and the information that we had in our file, assuming this was a real deal, we would have had information in our file with respect to each one of the gentlemen here today. The registrant classified in the lowest class for which that person is eligible. The registrant will receive a notice of classification identifying the claim considered, which will notify him whether the claim was granted or denied, and if denied, the reason for denial. We're going to give that decision today instead of waiting for any further. The notice of the classification will inform the registrant of his appeal rights and procedures. The registrant may file written summary of testimony within 5 calendar days from the date of this hearing. And finally, for conscientious objectors claims only, if classified 1-L and found qualified for service, will receive order to perform alternative service and required to serve 24 months if classified 1-AO. Will receive induction reporting date for non-combatant service in the armed services. Each of these gentlemen were convinced all of us to a person that they were eligible and were granted conscientious objector status. So you all received the coveted CO status, and thank you again for participating. James, you want to add anything? Ladies, that concludes our mock board, draft board hearing. Thank you.
Well, they say that honest confession is good for the soul. And so I need to make an honest confession. Andreas Stump was a plant. I intentionally wanted him to show what probably won't pass with the draft board. So he's a very sincere, genuine young man who said this is going to be hard to do. I thought maybe a backwards hat and a pair of shades would have helped. But the point is this. The draft board's looking for sincerity. They're not looking to force you to do something you don't believe in doing. And we need to appreciate that. We need to appreciate that. It was mentioned, I want to remind you, young men, you think it hasn't happened in such a long time, it doesn't matter. It does matter. It's the law. And there's actually a pretty stiff fine if they ever wanted to really enforce it for not registering. If you do not register, you will never get the opportunity to sit before this draft board as a CO. You voided that opportunity, and John has already told us that. There are some of these registration forms back on the table. If you happen to run out of them, you don't have one, you haven't registered, and you want to, why, please go back and help yourself. If they're out, go to the local post office. You usually have them there.
Thank you for listening to this message. We trust that it has been a blessing to you. If you would like additional sermons or a catalog, please visit our website at effortofministries.org. Call us toll-free at 855-557-7902 or write to us at Ephrata Ministries, 400 West Main Street, Suite 1, Ephrata, Pennsylvania, 17522. You are welcome to copy this message for free distribution. This ministry is supported by your donations. May the Lord Jesus bless you.